Right. Morning. If you'd like to turn your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 16 is the passage that I've been assigned this morning. Although there's a decent amount of material covered in 1 Corinthians 16, the main topic that we're going to focus on our class is on giving or the collection for the saints. This chapter's, winding up the first letter that he wrote to them. The first part of it is really about the collection. He talks about some opportunity that he has. He talks about some of the faithful brothers and sisters in the congregation there, and he gives them a final salutation at the end. One of the things that's interesting, we see this phrase, now concerning the collection for the saints. It's a phrase that's used six or seven times in Paul's letters, and when you look it up, it was new to me when I was kind of studying this. It's a specific phrase that he's using, and it means he's heard something about the activity going on in Corinth, and he's going to write to them about that specific issue that he's heard about. So he says, now concerning the collection, what most believe is that there's been people out of that congregation that have shared information back to Paul, either personally traveled to him or sent word, like Chloe or Fortunus or Stephanus, which are, we believe, to be faithful members of that congregation. And he commends them several times. So that may be how Paul is hearing about what's going on in the congregation there. Another thing that's interesting, just kind of contextually about the book here, look at verse 21. Paul says this a number of times in his letters. He says, the salutation with my own hand, Paul's. And so there's a lot of people that believe that Paul had, issues with seeing, and that he had a scribe that would document and write as he spoke. I can almost kind of see him pacing around and thinking and talking, with the help of the Spirit, about what to write these different churches, and somebody was documenting that for him. But to instill a sense of authority and a seal that this was truly from Paul, at the end of the letter he said, okay, scribe, you can have a seat now. I'm going to finish this off at the very end with my very large letters so that people know it's from me. So just a couple interesting things about the very first verse, now concerning, and then verse 21, the salutation with his own hand.
Once, I
think that there's some others.
Was there some others?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple others where he says with his hand. So I'll see if I can get that for you, Dwayne. So the rest of the time, I'd like to focus on the collection for the saints. Jesus and his apostles considered money both hazardous and helpful. And they also taught us how to minimize the hazards of money and maximize the helpfulness of our money. So today I'm going to spare us on the tragedies of the things that money can bring, the hazards, and we're going to instead focus on how to maximize our joy in the Lord in a way that we can use our money to be helpful to one another. So make clear immediately in our lesson this morning that money in and of itself is simply what? A piece of paper and a little piece of money. Metal. Paper and metal is all it is. And the reason that they're of any concern to us at all is that in our culture, as it has been for centuries, we established that these pieces of paper and these little pieces of metal function as currency. They'll represent value. So money is significant for us simply because we exchange it for what we value. What you do with your money shows what you value with your heart. I think that's an important concept as we think about the collection. What you do with your money shows what you value with your heart. We value life and taste. And so we exchange food for money to fill us and sustain us. But also, we like the way that things taste. And so we value those, and so we exchange it for our money for food. We value education, and so we give money for books and tuition. We value entertainment to varying degrees, and so we exchange money for ball games and beaches and books. Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, verse 34, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." And the movement of our money, where we send it, what we spend it on, signifies the movement of our heart as well. It's like the two are tied together. Where your money goes, your heart will also. And hopefully it's your heart that's leading the way and not the money. So when I say that money is both a hazard and a help, what I mean is that the pieces of paper and the pieces of metal coins that you have in your pocket, they have the capacity to show that you value things more than God, or that you value God more than things. That's the difference between the help or the hazard. The paper is nothing. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, this is the end of Paul's first letter to the Corinthian church. He makes it abundantly clear that we have an obligation to have a thoughtful plan of regular giving. A thoughtful plan of regular giving. And while there are some new parameters that are laid out here in 1 Corinthians 16, he gives them some additional guidelines in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9. He gives parameters to the Galatian church as well. But the concept of giving precedes the writings of Paul by a long shot. So if you think all the way back to the book of Genesis, God asked Cain and Abel to bring an offering. Although it's not specifically written down, we know it's implied because they came with their offerings in Genesis chapter 4. We find that Abraham gives to Melchizedek, who is a type of what? Or whom?
Christ,
the high priest. He ties to him. We find that Jacob promised to give God a tenth in Genesis chapter 28. When giving the law in Leviticus, Moses said that that the tithe belonged to who? The Lord. It's the Lord's. And that it was holy to him in Leviticus chapter 27. Under the Mosaic law, there appeared to actually be three tithes. A regular tithe given to support the priests and the work of the temple. A festival tithe for the celebration of the required feast. And a charity tithe given every third year to the Levite, the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widows. And some people have done the math on that. When you look and add it up, it could be anywhere from 20 to 30% rather than a typical tithe or a tenth that some people think of.
Was that once a year?
Some of those were once a year. Some of those were more regular. So the timing varied. When we see the displeasure of God in Malachi chapter 3, he says that the people robbed him. And they say, "Well, how did we rob you?" And he said, "You didn't provide tithes and offerings." And of course, there's the precedent in the New Testament as well regarding the value of giving in places like Acts. We see that the people shared and had all things in common. And what did they do with their land and their possessions? They sold them and brought the money to the feet of the apostles. And then immediately after we hear that, we have two examples, both money as a help and money as a hazard, from what individuals?
Barnabas
on the helpful side. He sold all he had and he brought it and laid it at the apostles' feet. And then who used it for a hazard?
Ananias
and Sapphira. And we know that story. I think we can all agree that the principle of giving has always been important to God and should be equally important for us today. There are a number of ways that we could approach the topic of giving, but I'm going to focus on these five simple questions. Why should we give? How should we give? Sorry, Rachel and Brandon. How should we give? And I know that's small. When, who, and what? There's probably other things, but these are the ones that came to mind as I was getting my thoughts together. We'll start up in the top left. Why? I'll read 1 Corinthians chapter 16 for the first four verses or so. Now, concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the church of Galatia. And it's interesting. Paul starts with Galatia and he gives them orders for collection. Then he moves to Corinthians and he reminds them what he told the Galatians. And then he goes on to tell, I think it's the Romans and some of the others as well, how they were given to the Corinthians. So he keeps reminding different groups progressively. So you must do also. On the first day of the week, Let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. And when I come, whomever you approve by your letters, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem. But if it's fitting that I go also, they will go with me. Now I'll come to you when I pass through Macedonia, for I'm going through there, and it may be that I will remain or even spend the winter with you, that you may send me on my journey wherever I go. And it goes on to say there. So, context here, Paul is saying you need to lay up, and there's a specific purpose that Paul is collecting money. Who is this contribution really going to at this time?
Church at Jerusalem, I think.
The church at Jerusalem. There's been oppression, there's been famine and poverty in that kind of initial church that was founded there, and Paul was really trying to have the brethren help them out. Greek brethren that had been converted, helping a lot of the Jewish brethren who had also been faithful.
Do you think this is the first time that that's happened?
This is the only time that I could find. I do think it's probably the first one that they've collected money to send to another congregation that needed the help. So that's kind of the context that we're looking at here. So number one reason for why we're to have the collection for the saints, it's commanded, right? Paul implicitly tells us that we are to do this, and he tells multiple groups, Galatians, the Corinthians, he tells the Ephesians as well that they need to do this. But is that the most important reason we should give because we're told to, because it's in the rule book? What's the real reason why we should give?
Lay up treasures in heaven.
All right. Paul actually probably addresses it a little bit more clearly and directly when he writes a second letter to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 8. Look what he says, beginning verse 7. But as you abound in everything, in faith and speech and knowledge and all diligence and your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. And what he's talking about is giving. It's called a grace. He said, I speak not by commandment, but I am testing the sincerity of your love by the diligence of others. This is an opportunity to show not only how much you love one another and having all things in common, but also your ability to show how much you love the Lord by being willing to care for the others. So I would agree with Bob. We don't do it just because it's a command. We do it because we love the Lord and we love one another.
In fact, if we give it unwillingly, it's not going to
it's worse. Yeah. The collection is a weekly test of our sincerity of love toward God and others. Think about that. Every opportunity we have to gather on the Lord's Day and we have the plates passed around, think about that as a test of your sincerity of love. Our responsibility to give is primarily a response to God's generosity, like the gift of the woman that came to Jesus' feet and anointed his feet with expensive oil. She loved him so much, Jesus said, because she had been forgiven so much. To borrow from our Calvinist friends, giving is an outward sign of an inward change. I think there's a right application of that term. If something has truly changed in you when you became a Christian the way it should have, it should motivate you to want to be a generous person because you know how much you have received from the Lord and been forgiven from him. Paul refers to giving, I think this is interesting, as sowing. If you're doing any work right now or wanting to make your lawn look better, now is the right time to be sowing seed in your lawn. And he refers to giving as sowing. And he says, what is given isn't lost. What happens when you sow a seed? Does it die? Does it go away? No. It comes back at a later time, perhaps in a different form, and often in a greater amount than you gave it. I think that's a really good analogy. I think one that everybody can wrap their mind around. Giving is like sowing. God supplies both the seed as well as the result. And so, why should we be concerned or worried about his ability to abundantly supply ourselves as the giver? He can take care of the whole package. Isaiah chapter 55, verse 10 talks about that. We also learn a valuable lesson about the reason for giving in the story of Cain and Abel. Abel gave of his first fruits, and what does it say that God, how did God look at Abel? There's a word that's used twice in Genesis chapter 4. God respected him, and he respected his sacrifice. That word in the Hebrew means to look favorably. God looked favorably upon Abel, or respected him, because of what he gave. That sounds a lot like the blessing that Moses gave the children of Israel in Numbers chapter 6. The song that I know you probably are familiar with. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift his countenance upon you and give you peace. To look favorably or to have the respect of the Lord should mean something to us.
Have you considered my servant Job?
Yeah.
What he said to Satan.
A lot of respect for Job right there. Here's another one, and I brought this up just a little bit earlier as well, on the why we should give. Giving is a grace, or it's a gift of ministry, it says. So we think about the spiritual gifts that people had. I think that we need to be thinking about giving as one of those ministries as well. While it may not be brought on as a special, unique gift by the Spirit today, I think that some people are better than others at giving. And that's a wonderful gift. You know, some people are good teachers. Some people are really good at being encouragers, and others, there are just people that are really good at giving. My wife is a lot better than I am, and it's helpful for me. I don't know if that's true of other marriages or not, if women tend to be more generous than men, or I guess it's not a set pattern, but that's the way it is in our house. Listen to what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 6 and 7 about the ministry of giving and grace. So we urged Titus that as he begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well. But as you abound in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all diligence, and in your love for us, see that you also abound in this grace also. And what he's talking about is the grace of giving. I got a note written in my Bible here. I don't know if you remember, Jim Basinger, it's probably been 15 years ago, gave a sermon on grace and all the different definitions of the manifold grace of God. And as he was going through, I circled the word grace in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 7, and he defined it as generosity prompted by love. I thought that was good. Giving is also a work of faith. James chapter 2, James is one of the most practical application books of the whole Bible. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and you say, depart in peace, be warm and filled, and don't give them the things that the body needs, of what profit is it? So we're doing it to demonstrate our faith. It's a work of faith, giving is. It also teaches and reminds us that money and possessions can become idols if we become fixated on them. 1 Timothy chapter 6, for the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. The last point I have on why we give. When we give, we become messengers from God. And the thankfulness that people have when they receive a gift from us should flow right back through us to God. So what we do is we act as a conduit to glorify God through our giving. So those were some of the thoughts I had on why we're to give. We're commanded to. It's an expression of our love for one another and our love for the Lord. It's a work of faith, a work of grace. It reminds us that we shouldn't be attached to our money too much and become a worshiper of it. And it also gives us an opportunity to glorify God. Comments from anybody on why you think we do it? Let's talk about the how. This one's pretty easy. We won't spend much time on it. Cheerfully, willingly, and freely. Plenty of passages in 2 Corinthians 8, 2 Corinthians 9 about how to do that. And then I also had 2 Corinthians 8, where Paul says that we're to do it not by commandment, but the test of the sincerity of our love. We're also supposed to do it liberally. This is the one time where we come and say, you need to be a liberal Christian in our giving. We are all blessed abundantly. And with abundant blessings come responsibility. Luke chapter 12, verse 44, for everyone to whom much is given, much will be required. Philippians chapter 4, verse 10, the Philippians care for Paul. It says that you flourished again in your giving. You really wanted to give, but you didn't have an opportunity this time. It's like they were searching for an opportunity to give to Paul, but they didn't have anybody physically to take the money to him until Epaphras came and was able to finally take that gift. But he uses the word, you flourished in your giving, liberally. 1 Corinthians 8, the Macedonian churches, how did they give? Proportionally. They gave of their ability. Yes, they gave beyond their ability. What does that mean, they gave beyond their ability?
They probably did. Kind of
cheated themselves.
They did without things. They may have cheated themselves. It's kind of like going out to the bank and saying, I'd like to get a $50,000 loan to help the churches in the Philippines. I don't have the money. I'm willing to pay interest on it. It's beyond my ability to pay them. So, you know what? I'm going to do something above my ability and get some help. Or put myself out of use of something and give it to somebody else if it's not monetary. Not with notoriety. On the how we should give, not to be seen. I won't read it all, but you know the passage in Matthew chapter 6. Jesus is chastising the Pharisees and others who give their charitable deeds to be seen by other people. And how does he tell us that we need to give? In secret, not knowing the right hand, knowing what the left is doing. And God will be the one that will reward us in secret as well, or reward us openly, because he can see us in secret. Here's an interesting comment that I wanted to make. Paul has Titus be one of the people that goes around to collect some of the money in the churches, but he has another person go with him as well. It's an unnamed brother that's mentioned twice without a name in either one. I think that it's interesting. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 18 mentions this, quote, other brother that accompanied Titus. Don't know who the other brother was. Possibly Daryl. They also asked the churches themselves to select somebody to send the money. I find that interesting.
Some have said that they thought that maybe was Luke.
It could have been. I saw his name come up in one, but I think it's speculation. But the point is there was individuals who were trustworthy to handle the giving, both in the local congregation to take it to Titus or to accompany Titus as they sent it to Jerusalem. And Titus was trustworthy as well, but he had another helper beyond him. Not only did there have to be a great sense of trust, but there also had to be the appearance of trust as well. We should give on the how with no strings attached or stipulations or conditions. When you put your money in the offering plate this morning, do you have a little note that goes with it that says, I only want this to be used for this?
It has been done.
Yeah. Should it be done?
No.
I don't think so either. We'll talk about this in a minute. We have the ability to give individually as well. And if you have certain things that you'd like to give to, I think that's great. And I think it's actually expected of us to give outside of the corporate worship service. But when we give here, we're entrusting, just like with Titus and this other brother and Paul, that the money will be used for a good purpose and a right purpose.
I know that some people, I was part of the congregation, some people, person, gave a great amount of money to the church, but had written instructions how it was to be used. It could not be used for any congregation other than that congregation. It could not be used to spread the gospel anywhere else, etc., etc. You know, that's not the example we see in the Bible.
Yeah, I think that's one of the purposes why we go through good measures to select reputable men to be deacons, to think through those things and to understand the needs of the church and to use that money wisely. And we should put trust in the leadership of our congregation to do that. What about plates? When did we start passing plates? Does anybody know? This started, yes.
It was actually a Catholic thing.
Okay.
That's one of the things that we inherited from the Catholic.
All right. Here in America, I did a little research on it. It started right about the late 19th century, end of the 1800s, first of the 1900s. And before that, they had a box. Most congregations had a box that you would put your money in. And not for sure all the why on the plates. Maybe they thought that it would stimulate more giving. I don't really know. Early American colonial, and I'll use the word churches, not the true church, were initially funded by the government, just like they were over in England. And so these congregations would receive federal dollars for their churches. Public funding for most, again, churches didn't cease until the American Revolution with the establishment of the Establishment Clause in the First Amendment and the separation of church and state that prohibited Congress from starting a national church.
I'm old enough to remember when we walked up and laid it on the table.
Kind of like the laying at the apostles' feet?
You may be going to mention this, but when Jesus talked about the widow that gave two mites, well, what did they do? Well, they were all, he was sitting in the back of the synagogue,
yeah,
or whatever building, whatever he was at, and people went up and walked by a box or whatever, and as I understand it, they had like a back plate or something, and probably the Pharisees had that put up there, so they would take all their coins, because they didn't use paper, and they would throw them up against that metal back plate, so it would make a lot of noise, like, look at how much money I threw in there. And the poor widow just had two little coins to put in.
Yeah.
So they certainly, I don't think, passed the plate then.
Yeah. I've heard that before. When I think about what that might have looked like, it's kind of like The Price is Right, and somebody pulled the lever, and all the lights came on, and it's like, oh, here go the sirens and everything, and, you know, I want to be seen, and that's certainly not what God wants. I want to bring up a point here, because I like to bring up interesting, sometimes controversial points, but electronic contributions. There are congregations that have moved to that. Not saying that it's right or wrong, but it is another form and fashion. It may be something that we consider at some point in time about making contributions. So I'll just leave it at that. Let's talk about the when. When do we give? Obviously, 1 Corinthians 16, as we read here, we're to give on the first day of the week. Does that mean it's the only time that we give?
No,
absolutely not. Does it mean we have to put something in the plates that are passed every single Sunday?
I think we should if we've been prospered, and I've got a couple of reasons why.
All right.
One is this phrase right here, on the first day of the week, let each one of you lay by the store. Okay, there's actually more direct command to lay by the store on the first day of the week than there is to partake of the Lord's Supper. Jesus Christ didn't institute the Lord's Supper on a Sunday morning. Okay, but we know by example that that's when the apostles met with the churches. That's when they broke bread and remembered his death, because he arose on the first day of the morning of the first,
yeah,
day of the week. But do we, you know, should we say, well, we'll just remember his death once a month or once,
yeah,
a year? I mean, that's the same logic as some people say, well, I don't have to, you know, I'll just throw it in once a month.
Yeah.
Or once a year, maybe. Well, I'll say one more thing. The longer you hold on to your money, the harder it is for you to give it away.
That's a good point. You know, if you're accustomed to giving $20 every Sunday and you don't give for a period of time, maybe you're on vacation, maybe you forgot your checkbook or something like that, and it rolls around, and now you need to give three times as much. Maybe you give $200 every Sunday and you don't give it, or you miss a couple and now you got to write a $600 check, or you get to write a $600 check. It does feel different, I think, mentally for some people. So I would agree with that comment. And I do think that it clearly lays out a good pattern on the first day of the week. Will I say it's wrong to say, I'm going to set aside this amount every month and maybe I've got a separate bank account or something that it automatically goes into and I give it once a month? Is that wrong? I'm not going to say that's wrong. But I would agree with Dad here on this one to say this is a very good precedent, and it lays it out pretty clear that this is a good pattern to follow. I think there was a comment back here. Bob?
The thing that I think about is that it says, as you've been prospered. So if you get, let's say you get a check once a month.
Okay.
Is it okay to pay as soon as you get the check? And I'd say yes. And my thinking is this way. If you hang on to it, because I think you want to give, in other words, you don't say, well, this is what I got left over after I played golf and after I did this and this. So if you give, as you've been prospered, let's say you sell cattle, you don't sell cattle every month, but let's say you sold cattle or whatever, you got paid for some job you've been working on for several months, I say that's the time that you ought to give. That's kind of my thinking. And we do it on the first day of the week. And so somebody might say, well, I think you should take that money and divide it up equally four times, since there's four Sundays in a month. You know, I'm not sure that's...
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying I don't think that part's important. I think the important part is...
Good points on both of those ends. I wanted to talk for a minute because I wanted to get to this, and I'll hit you in a second, Jason, is also... net versus gross. A lot of people, if you're fully employed at an organization, you'll have an opportunity to contribute to 401k, 403b, something for your kids, college funds or whatever. And so you may start with $10,000 for a time period, and then an amount automatically goes to your Roth, to your IRA, to your 401k, and then now you're down to $7,000. When we think about our giving, what is the first thing that we should think about before we put money into an IRA or, you know, a 401k? Yeah. I realize that there's taxes. Everybody's going to have your federal and your state taxes and everything else that you've got to pay. And there may be some differences of opinion on, you know, thinking about our take-home pay versus our gross. But I will say for sure, it's not a residual leftover that we give after we've contributed to our retirements and our home and our car payments and everything else that we may have.
God doesn't want our leftovers like Cain gave.
Yeah.
He wants the best. He wants the first because he gave his first.
First fruits. Jason?
Yeah, actually, you just covered what I was going to say. I would say render to Biden that which is Biden's and render to God the things that are God's.
Yep. So a pattern to give regularly, you know, whether that's first day, some people give monthly. I can understand some of that as well. What I'm going to also say is there's corporate giving that we do here. But I think that there's a strong case in the Bible as well that we should have what I'm just going to call ad hoc giving, which is individual giving. A need comes up in your somebody that you know of needs help, whether they're in the church or not. Obviously, we give preference to the church, and we help one another, but you will have opportunity to give outside of this corporate worship service, and I will just say you should be giving outside as well. Doesn't have to be much. It could be donating a laptop. It could be donating a truck. I got a truck from Larry Hammer. Dwayne?
Yeah, you know, I think what you said, that this is from the heart. And I think we're making too much of making a letter of the law out of it. And I don't agree with quite a few things that have been said.
This morning?
Yes.
Okay.
One verse that comes to my mind to kind of go along with what you said. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are the household of faith. So it's including, of course, like you said, we've been talking about the household of faith, but in that verse it's including doing good for others as well.
Just yeah.
If you see the opportunity.
There's also a comment in Acts 6 about the widows that were neglected in their distribution, and it called it a daily distribution. Again, I think that there's lots of opportunities for giving, not just on a Sunday morning, but things that we could be looking for on a daily basis. Jason?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think a part of when we start talking about things like this, it does become, quote-unquote, controversial. And it's because we have such a dramatically different culture than they did. I mean, the idea of the payroll check and things like that, you know, that's really an American thing.
Yeah.
And they did not have that. They gave literally of their, not necessarily monetary, but they gave of their grain, their oil, their, you know, the things that they had. Now, they had, you know, of course, with the Roman Empire, came the idea of silver and money and stuff like that. But, you know, they gave food. They gave, you know, resources. And, you know, Andrew and I have talked about this a couple of times, you know, ourselves, that, you know, money is good, but sometimes also resources are also good.
Yeah.
If somebody is struggling, money is great, but resources are going to be even more because in the moment you're going to need resources more than you're going to need, you know, paper bills.
Yeah. I had the who we should give to. I think probably the first thing that we need to consider is whose money is it to begin with? It's the Lord's. And Malachi talks about that. Luke chapter 12 tells us an interesting phrase, and it's a good one. It says that we need to be rich towards God. What does that phrase mean, rich towards God? I think it means it's more about, you know, the matter of our heart and that we are generous towards God and that we are aligned with Him rather than our own interests and desires. We're to give to the church. It says that we are to minister to the saints there in 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and chapter 9. And that could be a little bit more of a general term there, but I think it means individual members as well as for the leaders, like evangelists in the church, and elders as well. It's to support evangelists. We have precedent of Paul and Barnabas being supported with money in 1 Corinthians 9. We also have elders of congregations, although it's not typically the norm today. Elders of the congregation had the ability to be paid. And we had the remembrance of the Old Testament where we're not to muzzle the ox while it treads out the grain. 1 Timothy chapter 5 references that. Widows. I was reading some stats. The last thing I saw from the Census Bureau, there's about 800,000 people in the United States that become widows every year. And like three-fourths of those are women that become widows. Men tend to pass earlier. And when you look at the level of income and the hardships that that creates, that's one of the reasons probably why God had the knowledge, obviously, to know that they need to have care and consideration. We can give for unplanned large health care expenses for individuals in the church. Children, orphans in the church who have lost theirs, or for people who adopt children that their parents either can't take care of them or their parents die. It's expensive to be a foster parent or to adopt a child. This is work that our deacons look for and identify these needs to help out with physical blessings. Should we also give to the world?
Are you talking about the church or as
individuals? Individuals.
Are you talking about money or otherwise?
Well, I think it could be both. I think we could give both. And I would say yes, because we see Jesus doing that quite a bit. He feeds people. He gives them, I don't know that we necessarily see him giving money, but we see him sustaining for their physical needs, as Jason was talking about. And I think it's particularly good to look for those people who are seeking the truth to be helping out as well, that that may use that as an opportunity to know the Lord a little bit better.
Clearly the money of the church is not for the world.
Correct.
Or the church has failed and God's institution has failed. But I think we all understand that. But, you know, I agree that, you know, if we see a need, we want to help them monetarily as an individual. I think that's up to us. I struggle with the question on that, though, and I really don't have the answer. But, you know, the question is, if I have money to give to someone who's not a member of the church, then how come I didn't give that money to the church in the first place? You know, I mean, I'm kind of torn back and forth there.
Jason?
I think, once again, in today's culture, we have to be careful, too, about giving money. I would definitely stick to resources because, you know, other than opium back then, you know, today we have a lot of ways to enable somebody that, quite frankly, we may be thinking that we're helping them, and we're actually not. We're actually enabling their self-destruction. So it's better to give resources than money to a lot of people that are begging for money because we're just enabling them to further their addiction instead of getting them treatment, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Dwayne?
Yeah, I think we probably all have had that. You'd be sitting in a restaurant and eating, you know, and they come around with the check and they say, well, those people sitting over in that table pay for you.
Yeah.
You know? And so then that makes you want to, so, you know, we reciprocate. And we went through McDonald's just a couple weeks ago and got up to the window and they said, well, the lady in front just paid for you.
Yeah. Last comments I'll make here on the what we should give. We find out that the churches in Macedonia first gave of themselves. And so that's kind of the commitment of where our heart is. And that gets us in a right mind frame to be contributing. And then the second is this term first fruits. It's used back in Leviticus chapter 12 that when we come into the land that we're to give a sheave of the first fruits. It's a term that means promise to come. Promise to come. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9. Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase. And the last verse, Leviticus chapter 44, verse 30. The best of all first fruits of any kind and every sacrifice of any kind from all of your sacrifices shall be the priest. Also you shall give to the priest the first of your ground meal to cause a blessing to rest on your house. That is the promise to come. All right. Thank you for your comments during class.